Our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know what, why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Well, good morning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Got room for a couple of you to jump in here with us this morning. Coach Dave live. I'm live, and this is Coach Dave. It's December 19th, Monday, December 19th, 2016. The Lord didn't make it another one. And I got my special hat on today because today is the day that the Electoral College gets together to see whether or not Hillary and her crew are going to be able to pull off a coup on us, or whether or not Donald Trump is going to they're going to select him today and the Electoral College. I want to talk a little bit about that. Got a lot of stuff I want to talk about. I want to talk some Romans 13. I want to talk about how crazy this stinking world is and how we're getting away with it. And I want to encourage you that, man, Jesus is in control of everything that's going on here. Everything's going on. And again, I'm wearing my hat. So Roger gave me that, actually. I think, Roger, you bought this hat for me. And as I said all along, Donald Trump was going to be a guy who was going to stick his foot in the door and was going to open the door for the chance for the church to be great again. And those opportunities are going to be rising up to us. Guys, I'm going to tell you this. If they don't throw Donald Trump out today, if they're not successful at doing that, they're going to amp things up in such a way that we're not even going to believe it. And I don't know how many of you have been following. You know, we're going to go to Washington, D.C. A group of us are going to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of Donald Trump, the parade and all that stuff. And now we're seeing all kinds of threats of violence and blocking the trains and all that kind of stuff. And as Rich said last week, what a place for us to be. So we're going to go there no matter what. And then they're having the million lesbian march the next day after. Now, that's not what they're calling it. How about the million Jezebel march? That's what's going on the next day there, where the women are going to try to come in, and they're going to do whatever they're going to do. Guys, I'm just telling you, we could learn so much from our enemy if we would simply study our enemies. And here's where they get us. And by the way, it was one of the rules of radicals of Saul Alinsky is to make the opposition live up to their value system. And that's what they're doing to us. See, they lie and they cheat and they complain, like that video we showed last week of Martin Sheen and those guys. Now they're big constitutionalists and they're all into the founding fathers. See, they try to constantly force us to live up to our values while they play by a different set of rules. It's exactly what's going on. And if you think that we can win this game by playing only by our set of rules, what's that old saying? There are no rules in love and war, something along that. But we're at war. We're at a spiritual war. And unfortunately, we still aren't recognizing that. The whole thing going on here with John Kasich, let me give you an update here in Ohio with John Kasich. They're doing everything they can to try to flip two Republican senators to override the bill. I'm sorry, House of Representatives, two legislators trying to flip it to override Kasich's heartbeat bill or veto. And I don't know about you. Hey, Roger, in Ohio, was there a big pile of Christians out Kasich's office this weekend? Did a pastor-led pushback that you saw going on down through there? I saw there was a press conference where five of them went down there, five or six of them. And bless them for going down. I'm not criticizing them for that. But they said that they represented, a network of like 2,500 churches or something like that. Where were they? Where were those 2,500 churches? What if those 2,500 churches showed up down there and they took just a van load. They just took seven people with them down there. 2,500 churches taking seven. Somebody do that math for me. That's like 17,500 people, isn't it? Pretty close to that. And so, again, we lose because there's absolutely no pushback. What do you think it is? What do you think it is that is making Christian men in particular so compliant. You got a take on that? Anybody got a take on that?
Women.
What do you mean, Jared?
All the guys are addicted to porn, and it kills their ability to do. I mean, I'm one of them. To do anything. You know.
Yeah.
Dave.
Yeah.
I think two things. There's sin in their life, so they feel guilty, and then they can't participate because they don't feel worthy. And secondly, many of their wives, the minute they raise their head, their wives want them to, you know, be quiet, don't do that. You're, you know, that's not needed. And then they comply. Instead of saying, woman, I love you, but leave me alone, I'm going to do this.
What do you think, Larry? Go ahead.
Yeah, they do what you just talked about earlier. They try to force us to live up to the expectations of our code. And they tell us that our code says turn the other cheek.
Right.
You let me do whatever the hell I want to you guys, but you better not try to retaliate, because then you're not turning the other cheek.
Well, Larry, it's like when I told you I wanted to have that rally down at the State House, and I didn't do it. Remember, I told you about that. I should have been outside Kasich's door. And the one person in charge of it told me, well, whatever you do, do it in a Christ-like manner. See, that kind of stuff makes me want to just, Roger, what does that mean? Go in and flip over tables? That'd be Christ-like, wouldn't it? I should run into Kasich's office, and if I wanted to be Christ-like, flipped over those tables in his office. That would have been Christ-like. What do they mean when they even say that? Help me out here, Big Rich. What is it, man? What is it? I mean, what is it? The Christian men in particular won't rise up.
I got a question.
Okay.
If you're in war, you're in a battle, and you're in the trenches, and there's 10 of you, and 9 of them are scared to death, won't do nothing, what do you do? You're the only one willing to do something. What do you do with these 9 guys, man? I mean, just go ahead and go on out and
I know,
go along?
I'm with you, man. I don't know. I don't know. Hey, Rich, I've done that a time or two. I've gone along many times, you know? And I look at it and say, this would be so easy. This would be so easy to win. This would be so easy. Help me out, JR. Help me out here, man.
Coach, if you take a look, first of all, let's define what the traditional family or what a real family looks like. And after we define it, let's take a look at the family in America today. You hit on the terms of the man's role in the family and the woman's role in the family and the children's role in the family. Everything, you mentioned abortion. Everything that's going on out there is to destroy the family core.
Everything.
Abortion, women's rights. I'm sorry, but it's, you're going to lose something. If you transfer power from one end to the other, you're going to lose something on one end.
Right.
Traditional family, Ephesians 5, is God, Jesus, man, woman, children. Right now that's been flipped. It's all horizontal. Everybody's equal. Everybody's right in their own eyes. Mm-hmm. So I think Satan is extremely smart. He has literally destroyed the family. And without the family, without that core unit, what have you got in a civilization? Because that's the base. That's the core. That's the foundation.
It's true. That's true. That's true.
And they're all coming for Christmas.
Rich,
please.
That was the next thing I was getting ready to say. See, part of it is the paralyzation. You guys understand, we are on the precipice of something cataclysmic happening in this nation. If Donald Trump comes through and is selected president today, those bastards are just amping it up. You understand this? This ain't over for them. This is just getting started. And what are we doing? We're going to Christmas cantatas. And I run into people and they tell me how great their Christmas service was. Oh, Coach, you need to come to our Christmas Eve service. We're having this and this and this. And I got to get a barf bag. Because it's part of the way they domesticate us. It's part of it. Dance around the Christmas tree and the little savior wrapped in swaddling clothes. They trap us there. Our society and our culture has trapped us in the manger. We are trapped in the manger. And the advancement of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm telling you this, folks. Christmas hinders the gospel of Jesus. It does not advance it. It doesn't advance the gospel. It hinders it because it takes the focus off of everything. Unto us a child is born, and unto us a son is given. Then the government shall be upon his shoulders. We never get the transition from the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes to the crucified king returning. We never, ever get there. Jared puts up on the screen the phrase, do not be afraid, is 365 times in the Bible. Fear not, be not afraid, be not afraid. In our local church, I'm sorry, Lord. No, I'm not.
Coach.
Our church, hang on a minute, Sarah. I'll get you in a second. I didn't mean that to sound bossy. Our local church, they're putting up a live nativity scene. Now, hang on, folks. I live out in the freaking country. You understand? We see cows every day. I see sheep every day. I see goats every day. What is that supposed to accomplish? You mean people don't know what? Humbug, I hear you. Anybody feel me but me? Amen. Tradition. Jesus says you teach his commandments, the doctrines of men, you through your traditions. I love Christmas. I love trees. I love all that stuff. They're eating our daggone lunch. Go ahead, Sarah. I'm sorry.
All right.
They'll be saying I yelled at a woman.
No. No, you didn't. I interrupted you, so please forgive me.
All right, dear.
What I just wanted to say is, I cannot teach a boy to be a man. I know what a man is, and that's my man in the kitchen right now. He's a manly man. Men love him. Women love him. And babies fall all over him. He's a strong man. But yet, he builds me up too, into my place. I have power under him. But again, I can't teach boy to be a man. You have to.
Well, we could send him to elementary school with they're all female teachers in there, and then give him drugs, calm him down.
But you have to find out, I guess, for yourself in this world today what it is to be a man. And I think that's what you're trying to say to everyone here.
That's right. That's right. That is what I'm trying to say, because we don't even know. Can I tell you something? I'm drawn to Rich's testosterone. Anybody else drawn to his testosterone? I'm drawn to that, man. I'm not asking to go listen to Joel Osteen. I don't even want to hear that crap. I don't even want to hear it from most men. Why is it a real man, when he has his time off, a real man, doesn't put on skinny jeans and go listen to Christmas caroling? That a real man, when he has his time, now he may go because his wife wants him to. My wife wanted me to go down and see some nativity scene the other night. And I said what I just said to you. I see freaking cows right outside my window. I need to go down there and see a goat and a cow. Some fat guy dressed up with a beard on, thinking he's serving the Lord. I don't need to go see. Oh, I'm pissing them off. Sorry. I'm ticking them off now, aren't I? Huh? Why is it men say, hey, want to go to the Buckeyes game? You got a line a mile wide. Hey, want to go shoot some rabbits? Got them lying a mile wide. Hey, let's go deer hunting. Are you kidding me? Their cars are backed up for 2 miles wanting to go with you. Let's go do some Christmas caroling. Who the hell wants to do that? Joy to the world, the Lord is come. That's 2,000 years ago. I started out Monday morning. I was going to be in a great mood. I wasn't going to be on a rant. I'm telling you the truth, man. I'm telling you the truth. This whole Christmas season, this whole thing is just domesticated men. You're not in our ministry, Pass the Salt Ministries, you know, December is like a month off. Because if I go out and, I'm trying to stand up for life, or I'm trying to do anything for the cause of Christ during Christmas. Oh, I'm breaking that Christmas spirit. Oh, you're taking all the joy out of Christmas. Yes or no? Yes or no? Golly, daggone. Dale, man.
Hey, Coach.
Yeah.
An objective look at the Christmas activities and Christmas season, anyone with an honest opinion, objective look, would have to say more lies than truth are brought forth and promulgated during the Christmas season. Christmas, the whole Christmas scene
is a lie.
As a whole, has a whole lot more lies in it than it does truth.
It is a lie. It's pagan. It's a lie. It's a lie. Hey, listen. I often wonder, does Jesus come to his birthday party? Huh? Does he come? Oh, we may think he does. Does he? Does he come when you go to church and they're singing dashing through the snow on a one horse open sleigh, over the fields we go, laughing all the way, and everybody's eating it up, and boy, that was a great program, and it's all a lie. It's all a lie. Now, I'm not bah humbug. I'm gonna upset you here. We put up a tree. We do. I'm sorry, we do. Do it for my grandkids, my wife. I want to stay happily married. We put up a tree. We put presents under the tree. But that's not the focus of Christmas in my house. And you do know this, don't you, that Jesus was probably born in September. Probably. I got a video queued up to show you that. I'm not going to show you that today, when he was probably born. And to ask ourselves, for me personally, Rich, November 26th, that's my birthday. I don't celebrate it in July.
Yeah. You hear me?
Huh? Does anybody do that? Does anybody celebrate their birthday on a day it's not their birthday?
Yeah.
I'll say, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Coach, we missed your real birthday, but we'll celebrate it. We'll celebrate it here and put a tree up in honor of you. See, those are traditions. And when you begin to talk like this, then you become what appears to be religious. And I'm not trying to be religious. Far from it. It's not about that. Well, as I said on Friday, people say, Coach, you don't seem to have the Christmas spirit. Praise God, I don't. Praise God, I don't have that Christmas spirit. I got that warrior spirit. And that Christmas spirit drains the strength out of me. It drains the strength out of me. And at this time when everybody's flocking to Christmas, church on Christmas, I don't even want to go. Is that bad to say? Is it okay to say that, Raj? I don't even want to go.
Dave.
Yeah.
For the first of all, you know, if it wasn't, I think it, you know, our Lord is a funny guy at times, but had it not been for this celebration of Christmas, most retail stores would be closed because they only make it because of Christmas.
That's right.
Make their money, and that's what keeps pushing it. But yet they don't want you to say Merry Christmas. But I think you hit on something that's important. We don't hear it enough. Is we keep Jesus in the little manger.
We do.
We keep him mangering. With my little class of seven guys the last month, and I don't know what they're thinking, but every week I've been preaching, he ain't in the manger, he's a warrior, and they love it. They understand the full size of him now, and I think you're correct. Him, he's kept in the manger. It's dangerous to our faith. It just reinforces passivity.
Mm-hmm. I told you that cycle, we put him from he's a manger and then he's on a cross. Those are the two times we celebrate Jesus, the day he's born, the day he's died. We don't sacrifice him. We don't celebrate the idea that he's a soon coming king, that he's ruling and reigning right now. Right now he's ruling and reigning. And we never apply that to our own lives and the importance of seeing it done. Jared, pull up the Declaration of Independence. Find that for me real quick. I'm going to show you something that I think, as the Lord just kind of spoke this to me. I want to put these two things together. I got some good stuff to show you here. Rich was talking to me before we went on the air. Listen, I'm going to give a tip up out there, folks. Steve Quayle and Tim Alberino have produced a video called The Unholy Sea. It's about an hour, maybe an hour and 20 minutes, Rich. I can't remember. I haven't seen it in about a month and a half. The Unholy Sea. And it is an expose of... how do I say this? A prehistoric world that was here, and how it's been hidden and where it's been hidden, and then almost indisputable facts about the race of people being here that we've ignored. The Unholy Sea. I suggest you watch that. The Unholy Sea. I asked Jared to pull up the Declaration of Independence because I'm going to make a couple comparisons to you. Let's put that up here on the screen real quick, Jared. Let me stop here because I'm going to get into my history hat here real quick. I got my hat on. Make America Great Again. What's going on with Trump today in the Electoral College? Remember this. Folks, listen. We're so stupid. We are so stupid. We are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. And we see that those on the left, they love democracy when they got the numbers. But when they don't have the numbers, they love the courts. Because the courts overturn democracy. You with me? You guys with me on this? Right?
Coach, can you fix your mic?
I can. Is that better? Is that better, Jared? I guess. Yep. You guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Thanks. So when the God haters can't get democracy to work for them, which, by the way, democracy is once defined as two wolves and a chicken voting on what to have for dinner. That's a pure democracy. Democracy is mob rule. It's not good. It's not good. And I don't know if you saw this. All of Hillary Clinton's voting margin, all of it came in California. Every bit of it. You take California out of the picture and Trump just murders him. And so we're seeing today that this whole thing with Trump is going to go before the Electoral College to determine whether or not he's going to be president of the United States. Let me make this point to you, and then I'm going to move off of my history hat. The states in a democratic republic, folks, hear me. It's a representative democracy. It means this, that elected officials picked by the people represent the people, vote for the people. That's a representative democracy, okay? Now, understand this. The president of the United States is picked by the states. We'll say it again because you don't get it. The Electoral College was set up so that the states represented the people, that the states picked the president. People don't pick the president. The people don't pick the president. The states pick the president. Did you know that there was a time in America where the states did not directly vote their senators into office? It wasn't done by a direct vote. It was done by a vote of the state legislature. In other words, we have 100 senators, two from each state. It used to be, before the 17th Amendment was ratified, that our U.S. senators were picked by the elected officials in the state. Our state house would get together and they would determine who was going to be sent to Washington, D.C. to represent the state. That's the way that it was designed. And then the 17th Amendment comes along and it takes out that representative democracy, takes it out of there, and now puts it as a direct vote of the people, which is one of the worst things that could have ever happened. Because a senator goes to Washington, D.C. for 6 years. You vote his butt in, he's there for 6 years. You're stuck with him for 6 years. The way it was originally designed before the 17th Amendment is if that bad boy and went to Washington, D.C., the state elected a senator, and he went to Washington, D.C., and he misbehaved, they could pull him back and send somebody else. That's how the people maintain control of their government. You follow me? And so the Electoral College is set up specifically so that it wasn't mob rule, so that every state got a vote and who was going to represent the states, the United States. And now what do we see going on? Just because people don't know their history. Now they're trying to overturn that. It's government of the people, by the people, for the people. You know who the first person was to say that? I think. First recorded person who said that? Government of the people, by the people, and for the people? Gettysburg Address. Abraham Lincoln is the first person to have uttered those words. But I'm in the Declaration of Independence. I'm going to make a connection here you probably have never made in before. Oh, that sounded arrogant. You may have. Jared, go down to the second paragraph. It says this. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Self-evident means what? Obvious. Not only is it true, but it's so obvious, it's self-evident. We're not even going to argue about it. Everybody knows this. We hold these truths to be so obvious, so nobody's even going to argue about it. With me? I'm just kind of interpreting it for us, that all men are created equal. Now, we know they're not created equal. We know Rich is a lot bigger than me, and I'm a lot faster than JR. So we're not all created equal. Roger's got a bigger bank account than me. I'm stronger than Sarah. We're not all created equal, but we're created equal in the eyes of God. See, that all men are created equal in the eyes of God. That they are endowed by their creator. A creator, there it is, a certain unalienable right and rights that cannot be taken away. It's like this color of your skin, the color of your hair, cannot be taken, not will not, cannot, it's unalienable. It cannot be taken away. Your sex, your gender, can't be taken away, can't be changed. So now, hey, by the way, Rich, self-evident truths. We're not even going to argue them. They're self-evident, okay? But among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And that, okay, here we go. Here's a connection I'm going to make. That to secure these rights, what rights? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By the way, in that order, no life, no liberty. If you don't have any life, you don't have any liberty. If you don't have any life and liberty, you don't have any pursuit of happiness. They are in that order in particular. So you can take away somebody's pursuit of happiness, and they still have somewhat liberty, and they still have life. And you can take away their liberty, and they can somewhat have pursuit of happiness and still be alive. You take away their life, they ain't got any of those things. That's why they're specifically in that order. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Okay, then, to secure these rights, governments are instituted amongst men. Why are governments instituted amongst men? To secure the rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And where do they derive their just powers? Why, they get them from the consent of the governed. How about that? That when any form of government becomes destructive, these things, it's the right of the people to alter and abolish it and institute a new government laying its foundation on such principles and organizing power such form as to have them, as to them shall seem most likely to affect the safety and the happiness. Okay, we'll stop there, right? So our rights come to us from God. Jared, fly up there, Romans 13 for me. I'm connecting something I don't know if you've ever seen connected. Because this is the one they beat us over the head with. This is the one that keeps the churches muzzled. This is the one that tells us we have to obey all authority. See, that's not what it says. It says, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. Stop a minute. Hey, Rich, what's the higher power, man? What's the higher power?
God, man.
Come on, man. This ain't hard. I'm talking to church folk now. I'm talking to church folk. For there is, Rich, no power but of God. Is that what it says, or is that what it says? Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. And any power they have comes from God. I reread that a little different, Roger. You follow me, though? If there is any power anywhere in the world, it came from God. It emanates from God. All power emanates from him. Right? We know these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal and endowed by their creator. There it is. The power came, right? So whosoever therefore resists the power. Hey, Rich, what power? Come on. Whosoever there resisteth God, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Hey, JR, if we flip that upside down, are rulers today a terror to good works? They're a terror to good works. They're not a terror to evil works. They're a terror to good works. Will you then not be afraid of the power? Hey, Rich, what power? That power from God that emanates through man. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Will you then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and you shall have the praise of the same. This is so simple. How can any dudette stand in a pulpit and say we should obey ungodly government? Somebody help me out with this one, man.
Dave, it's like preschool stuff, man.
It's just, I mean, you have to, Rich, you have to purposely twist it. To come up with what they come up with. You have to purposely do that. And they purposely do that. Can I tell you why? Because they're cowardly. And so the easiest for them to say is, well, the government says I have to. And the Bible says I have to be a good citizen. Well, yeah, a good citizen is one who obeys God, not man. That's a good citizen. Oh, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. Would it be safe to say, if they are a minister of God to me for evil, that that's not ordained to God? Would that be safe to say? Is that a stretch? We think we've, you're the lawyer. If they're doing evil, are they ordained of God? Can't possibly be. Can't be. But if you do that which is evil, uh-oh, be afraid. Who should be afraid, Rich? Those who do evil. They should be afraid. Why? For he who? Who? Ruler. Who's the ruler? Who's the ultimate ruler? For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. So how'd they get around it? Well, I could connect another scripture right here. Woe to those who call good evil and evil good. So all they've done is said homosexuality good, Christians bad, and now they are obeying God by executing wrath upon those who are evil. And we're the evil ones. Guys, you understand I'm talking about the church? I'm talking about the church? That the state, our state legislator just passed a law saying that all babies are going to be protected, and the government, the governor, says no, and there's zero reaction from the church. So, ho, 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 who wouldn't go? That's where we've lost control of our government. And so, as I've been trying to say, the reason I got the hat on today is we better be prepared, Rich, because there are those who in America have already changed good and evil, and they are not going to let us change it back. That's where the battle's going to lie. It's where the battle always lies. There are those of us who know killing a baby is evil, and that should be punished. And the battle is who's right and who's wrong. Well, we know who's right and who's wrong. We know who is. And so John Kasich, he can veto that bill because he knows that the Christians are going to go along with him. Oh, they may be upset, but they'll go along with him. You know how he knows that? Why, last summer, we caught those dudes selling baby parts. What was the reaction? Well, we obeyed the government. We obeyed the government. We let the government give them more money to continue to do it. See, I'm trying to go somewhere here. See, I'm trying to go somewhere. At what point do we rise up and say, no, no, no?
They want Barabbas.
They do want Barabbas, brother.
They do.
The church wants Barabbas. But we want to celebrate Christmas. Hey, you want to cause a riot? Make Christmas trees illegal. Oh, that'd be it. That'd be the end of it. So I want to veer off here, and I want to go to someplace I think is really, really. Again, we know that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, and it's a battleground of the mind. We understand all that, right? I want to show you a video, quick video. I told you, Rich, you got me back into those archives. Which one is it, Jared? Make sure I get you on the right one. There it is. Jared, play the one that says governed by sociopaths. I made this. Wrong, that's the wrong one, Jared, I think. Governed by sociopaths. It's in the other ones I sent you. Yeah, that's it. 5 minutes and 8 seconds, I think. I made this 5 years ago. 5 years ago. Let's go ahead and play that. Governed by sociopaths.
Hi, friends. This is Coach Dave Dobbenmeyer, newswithviews.tv at newswithviews.com. And, well, I want to try to open your eyes up today, folks, because I really believe that something is going on in America that we haven't even really stopped to consider. I believe we are a nation governed by sociopaths. That's right. A nation governed by sociopaths. Now, this all came to my attention again this week when I saw on the news that Anthony Weiner is getting ready to run for mayor of New York. Now, Anthony Weiner. You remember who he was, right? He was the guy who was taking pictures of a certain part of his anatomy and texting it to people that he doesn't even know. And he stepped away from politics for a while. He did his penance or whatever it was, but now he wants to re-enter the political race. And I was listening to him today when he announced that he was going to run for mayor, and I thought, you have got to be kidding me. Does this guy have no shame? And then it dawned on me. That's one of the characteristics, by the way, of a sociopath. They have no shame. They are so self-indulged and so self-focused and so self-driven that they are characterized by the fact that they no longer have a functioning conscience. If you're anything like me, you watch what goes on the television, in the political world, and you watch President Barack Obama go out there and lie the way he does. I often ask myself, doesn't that guy have a conscience? How can you lie like that? Then I watch Hillary Clinton. I watch John Boehner. I don't care who it is. You watch them go out and lie and lie and lie over and over. Folks, those are not normal people. And then I began to take a look at the recent election of Barack Hussein Obama and Mitt Romney. And I asked myself this very simple question. Why would anybody want to be president of the United States? Would you want that job? I love my life. I love the things that I do. And I like the privacy that I have to be able to go golf and go do whatever, run out to Oklahoma and help with the people that have been harmed out there. I love doing that stuff. What type of person would be so much of a megalomaniac that he would want to be president of the United States? Well, you know what we have there, folks? We have a sociopath. And what is a sociopath? Someone who believes, number one, that they're always right, that their intentions are always good, and that they are the only one that has a solution. We've heard the president say a number of times, well, gee, if we just didn't have that Congress, and if we just didn't have that Constitution, I know what's best for America. If everybody would just follow me, we would be able to get that thing straightened out. Kind of reminds you of Jim Jones, doesn't it? The Kool-Aid drinking. Isn't it amazing? Jim Jones was the one who gave us that term, drinking the Kool-Aid. Folks, the people who are running for office in America are not normal people. They are sociopaths. They believe that the end justifies the means. What does that mean? That means if they can get the football across the goal line, it doesn't matter what they did to score. And why do we lose? Why do we lose? Because we have functioning consciences. I have a conscience. I have a moral obligation to speak the truth. When you watch President Barack Obama, do you think he's telling you the truth? Do you think he thinks he's telling you the truth? You know, he might believe what he's saying. But the reality of it is I watch him, I believe that he is a sick man. Look at Jerry Sandusky and the molestation of the kids at Penn State. He denies it to the very, right now denying it. Sociopaths no longer have a functioning conscience or the ability to feel or to reach out and understand the feeling. Remember Bill Clinton said, I feel your pain? But he didn't really. He really didn't feel your pain. Folks, we have a nation governed by sociopaths, those who only have their own interests, their own goals, and their own good in mind with every decision they make. Ask yourself this. Why would anyone want to be president of the United States? You have to be sick to want that office. We are a nation governed by sociopaths. This is Coach Dave Dobenmeyer at newswithviews.tv at newswithviews.com. We'll see you next time.
That's 4 or 5 years ago. Man, I looked young. No wonder my wife loved me back then. 4 or 5 years ago, right? Talking about then. And we look now. Look, here's our danger, guys. Hey, Jared, get this next clip up there. It says what a sociopath is. I think it's the second thing down. We're creating a nation with people that all they do is feel. It's all they do is feel. We heard Bill Nye, the science guy, come on, and he taught us how it felt, right? Feel, feel, feel. So therefore, we become governed by emotions. And our buddy Chad out there in Texas says, your emotions will betray you. And so, because, again, the battleground lies in the mind. And the average Christian does not wash their mind with the water of the word. We're becoming more and more easily manipulated by our emotions. I want to run down through this real quick. I don't know if you guys ever go to this website or not. It's naturalnews.com. It's a good, really good website, Natural News. This is from 2012. Wow, that's long. 6 years ago. 4 years ago. I can't do my math. Let's scroll down here, Jared. There's just 10 red flags that you should know that you're – hey, guys, some of them are in pulpits. All right, here you go. Sociopaths are charming. Most of them. That's why Hillary couldn't win. She was a sociopath, but she wasn't charming. Two, sociopaths are more spontaneous and intense than other people. Wow, is that true? They are intense. Look at this. They tend to do bizarre, sometimes erratic things that most regular people won't do. That's why they get elected. They're unbound by normal social contracts. Their behavior often seems irrational or extremely risky. Hey, guys, can you tell me, any man on here, why you would ever take a picture of your private part and ever send it to anybody else? If you're doing that, there's something wrong with you, isn't there? I mean, I can't. I wouldn't even take a picture of me with my shirt off and send it to my wife. I wouldn't even do that. Three, sociopaths are incapable of feeling shame, guilt, or remorse. That's a big one right there. That's a big one. Hillary Clinton couldn't have cared less about four guys getting killed in Benghazi. She knew she was supposed to feel bad. She understood she was supposed to feel bad, but she didn't have that feeling. You know what I'm saying? And so they were able to walk all over people. That's why they're able to say the end justifies the means, right? Because they don't empathize. They don't really think about it. I know my buddy, I'm not going to mention his name, who lost his grandson. His grandson was killed in a car accident. It was like, I got that word. It's like I got stabbed in the heart. I hurt so bad for him. Could you be president of the United States and really hurt for people? Well, I don't know if you could. Number four, sociopaths invent outrageous lies about their experiences. I won't even go there. Next one. Sociopaths seek to dominate others and win at all costs. Sociopaths. They're all around us. Some of them are in the pulpit. Somebody give me a thumbs up. Sociopaths tend to be highly intelligent, but they use their brain power to deceive others rather than to empower them. Their high IQs often make them dangerous. This is why many of the best-known serial killers who successfully evaded law enforcement, Ted Bundy, were sociopaths. Son of Sam. Seven, sociopaths speak poetically. They're master wordsmiths. Boy, I know a couple I'm thinking of. Hey, does Barack Obama hypnotize people or not? Is it just me? Seven, sociopaths are incapable of love. Boy, and they're entirely self-serving. They may fake love or compassion in order to get what they want, but they really don't feel love in the way that you and I do. I believe that. Eight, sociopaths speaks poetically. I already said that. I'm sorry. Nine, sociopaths never apologize. They're never wrong. They never feel guilt. They never apologize. Even if shown proof that they were wrong, they will refuse to apologize and instead go on the attack. Have you seen that? Have we seen that? And then they got old Charlie Manson up there. 10, sociopaths are delusional and literally believe that what they say is the truth. Charles Manson said, I've never killed anyone. I don't need to kill anyone. I think it. I have it here. I don't need to live in this physical realm. That's weird, huh? So these are the type of people, see, John Kasich. How could John Kasich betray people like that? It's simple. He's a sociopath. Okay, you can get that off there, Jared. Feedback from the Peanut Gallery. Any feedback there?
Hey, Coach.
Yep.
Money is the power to make decisions.
Yeah.
I'd like to have a 450 SL Mercedes, but I don't have the power. I don't have the money.
Right.
To make that happen.
Right.
The ACLU, at the week after the election, received $8.2 million in funds. Planned Parenthood received its largest uptick in history this month. NARAL says people are coming to them in droves. The Anti-Defamation League saw a 50% increase in their offerings. That means something. Again, money's the power to make decisions. The more power, the more money you have, the more decisions you make. And they're going to do something with those monies. And guess what that's going to be? That's going to be the continuation. And I'm going to call it the destruction of the family, because that's what all this is about. They have to get rid of that. They have to get rid of it.
And JR, good Christian people like me and you and Rich and Sarah and Roger and Larry and Sarge, and we give to churches.
Mm-hmm. Churches are enablers. They're enabling the whole process.
They are. They're enabling. They're not buying any ammunition with it. See, they're not. It's all show. It's all show. I was watching one of those Christmas things last night on the internet. Oh my goodness. They had lights going everywhere and smoke and mirrors, and they're singing, dashing through the snow, and people are standing there just in awe. They're just like, it's unbelievable. Oh Lord. Let me throw this at you. AJR. Great facts there, brother. Great facts. Hey, Sarge.
I steal from BJ on the show Saturday.
Oh, yeah? Who'd he steal them from?
I'm
just kidding, man. We're all stealing stuff from somebody. It ain't nothing new under the sun. Remember, I did a lesson on that last week, didn't I? I think so. Hey, Jared, pull up the March for Women, because I want to show you guys what we're facing when we're getting ready to go there in January 2021, 22. I meant to show you this the other day. Plans take shape for Women's March on Washington. Women's March. Hey, Jared, there you go, Jared. There you go, Jared. And you know what you're going to see? Because I always see it when I go to the pro-life marches. You're going to see these butchy, bossy women, and the little men will have, the little men will be walking along beside their wives.
They're not women, they're bitches.
They're what?
Never mind.
Yeah, I think I got him.
That's what he said. And I was going to say, will you stop calling them women? I am a woman. They are not.
They're not women.
They're not women.
No.
I'm sorry. They can claim similar parts and product, but
yep. Our buddy Jim just texted me and said they're not sociopaths. He said they're reprobates. That's probably a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Apart from Christ, that's where you lead, right? Look at these people. Hey, Larry, where are the Christian men? Jared, where are the Christian men? Where's the promise keepers? Took 2 million men to Washington, D.C. And what did they do while they were there, Roger? Prayed. We prayed. These girls are praying too. P-R-E-Y.
Hey, Coach.
They're praying. Yeah.
I guess I see it as two sides of the coin that help our apathy is money. It's all the war of the flesh, right? But there's
right.
money and sex. And they've got men definitely on the sex one, you know, and then the money one, I think they've got women on the money one and it's, you know,
Jared,
threatened taking that away and the guy shuts up.
They're going to lose though, Jared, because now men are wising up and they're creating dolls. They're creating blow up dolls. So don't argue with them. You guys want to talk about those are out there, right? They now have these blow up dolls, or these figurines, or whatever you call them, that look like movie stars, and they are capable of having sex with men. They won't argue with them, probably whisper sweet nothings in their ear. So good thing is women will be lucky because men will be obsolete in their lives. It won't matter to them anymore. Jared, let's scroll down through this thing a little bit here because I want you guys out there to all get a feel for what's going on. It says on January 21st, Women's March on Washington. See, it isn't women's because my wife ain't marching, and Sarah ain't marching, and Carla ain't marching. Right? Nope, they're not marching.
I wonder if we started calling it the Jezebel Parade, if
that'd be more appropriate. It was originally billed as the Million Women March. They've revealed additional details about their planned event. So you can go to their Facebook page and find out more about it. And it starts at 10 in the morning at the Lincoln Memorial, and it's going to conclude at 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Memorial, site of Martin Luther King Jr.'s stirring I Have a Dream speech in 1963 before a crowd of more than 250,000 civil rights leaders. You notice how they get Martin Luther King in there? These people are so wicked. These are so wicked, these folks. See, Martin Luther King freed black women as well, right? On Monday, national organizers released an official statement outlining their vision. The rhetoric of the past election cycle has insulted, demonized, and threatened many of us. Women, immigrants of all statuses, those with diverse religious faiths, particularly Muslim, people who identify as LGBTQIA. You thought I was lying when I started saying all of the alphabet was going to be in there soon, right? Native indigenous people. I'm an indigenous person. I was born here. Black and brown people, people with disabilities, economically impoverished, and the survivals of sexual. Can you believe this? Rich, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. We're confronted with the question of how to move forward in the face of national and international's concern and fear. Unbelievable. Women's March on Washington will send a bold message to our new administration on their first day in office and to the world that women's rights are human rights. They're talking about abortion, you know. We stand together, recognize that defending the most marginalized among us is defending all of us. Wouldn't you say an unborn baby's pretty marginalized? They ain't defending that, are they? No. The march is seen by organizers as the first step in creating change. Where the hell they been? From the grassroots level up to achieve parity and equality for equity for women at all levels of leadership. We work peacefully. Yeah, they do. While recognizing there is no true peace without justice and equality, equity for all. Hear our voice. All right, boys, that's what we're going to be walking into. So it's going to take off at the Washington Monument and end up in the Washington Monument, and it's going to be 7 hours of hell with a bunch of I'll be nice. Dykes on bikes. Dykes on bikes. That's what it'll be. 7 hours of hell. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. And we'll go lift up the name of the Lord, and we'll call them out for what they are. So there, somebody's been wanting some information. There you got it. What was that Facebook page, Jared? Can you scroll back down there so we can all go like that Facebook page? Women. National, there it was. Women's March on Washington. Yeah. Comments. Sarge, you're quiet this morning. You still there?
Yeah, we're getting ready to head down to Augusta today to march with our one electoral college voter to cast our one vote for Trump today. So that's what we're up to. But, yeah, this march is going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah, it is going to be for sure. So, anyway, let me piggyback on that because I could have pulled up something else here. They're doing everything they can to make sure that it's not a peaceful thing, not a peaceful inauguration. It's going to be – Wow. And then what are they going to do afterwards when all that falls apart? Cool. Okay, let's see. One more thing. How much time I got? Let's finish up on this one. Jared, when was Jesus born? 6 minutes? By a good man. Car gallops.
Exactly when was Jesus born? We do not know for certain because the Bible does not give us a specific certain date, nor do we yet have any historical records from the eyewitness time period that gives us an exact day. In theory, though, if one could pinpoint the day on which Zechariah and Elizabeth conceived John the Baptist, one could extrapolate an approximate date of Jesus' birth. This is because the Bible does clearly say that Elizabeth was in her sixth month of pregnancy when the angel Gabriel came to Mary. Therefore, approximately 15 months after Elizabeth conceived, Jesus would have been born. The timing of John's conception, then, is tied to the Annunciation to Zechariah while he was serving at the temple. The Bible says that Zechariah was serving in the temple under the course of Abijah. What we know with great certainty is that the priests were divided into 24 courses, serving for 1 week at a time from Sabbath to Sabbath. In addition, there were 3 weeks of the year when all of the courses were on duty: Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. 24 divisions each, serving 2 weeks out of each year, plus the 3 additional weeks, makes up the total course requirements for the priests serving in the temple. Presumably, then, within a week or two of Zechariah's return from Jerusalem, John would have been conceived. The key, therefore, as stated earlier, is to narrow down the dates on which Zechariah would have been serving at the temple. If Zechariah were serving his first course of service at the 8th week of the new Jewish year, which begins in our March or April, that would have put him in the temple sometime in June, perhaps very near the Pentecost temple service. He would have returned home, and Elizabeth would have conceived shortly thereafter. 6 months out from then, when Mary visited Elizabeth, and just after Mary conceived, would have put Jesus' conception in December, perhaps even around the Feast of Dedication or Hanukkah.
Conception.
3 months later, John would have been born, putting his birth at around the Passover feast. 6 months after that, Jesus would have been born, sometime in late September or early October. Amazingly, right around the Feast of Tabernacles, when the Jews would have been celebrating God and God's people now dwelling or tabernacling together. This early fall date would also account for a Roman census taken when travel would be easier, and also the shepherds still in the fields at night with their flocks. If Zechariah, however, were serving his second course of service at the 32-week mark, beginning from the 1st week of the Jewish New Year, it would put Zechariah serving his course in the temple around October. 6 months out from then would be the conception of Jesus around March or April, Passover, and Jesus' birth 9 months later, in late December, coinciding with the Feast of Dedication or Hanukkah. It is a fact that several of the early church fathers from the 1st and 2nd century favored a late December to early January date for the birth of Jesus. Since they were about 2,000 years closer than we are to the actual birth event, perhaps they knew something specific about all of this that we do not know for certain. As provocative and tantalizing as this line of speculation is, it is difficult to honestly nail down a specific date with any great degree of certainty. Some calculations favor a fall date for Jesus' birth, others favor a winter date. As stated before, though, it is a fact that since the 1st century, there was little dispute among the Christians and the early church fathers who were investigating it then. In fact, to this day, the Western Church in Bible lands celebrates his birth on December the 25th, and the Eastern Church celebrates it on January the 6th. The Roman Emperor Constantine set the date officially for December the 25th in 325 AD. Apparently, though, according to historical records, Constantine would have been influenced by the early church fathers in this matter. The very first time we ever find a historical record that suggests that Constantine set this date so that it would coincide with pagan winter festivals was in the 12th century AD. It wasn't until the 18th and 19th century that this view of December 25th gained prominence. While we do not then know a certain date of his birth, we maintain that it is still biblical and appropriate to celebrate the arrival of the Christ into the world. The Old Testament celebrates it. The New Testament celebrates it. All 4 Gospels celebrate it. The Apostle Paul celebrated it and established its prominence in proclaiming the gospel message. The angels celebrated it. The shepherds celebrated it. And the wise men celebrated it. How and when you celebrate it is a matter of personal conviction between you and the Lord. But to not celebrate the birth of the Christ and the fulfillment of one of the most central prophecies of the Old Testament is, in our opinion, simply a sad and unfortunate missing of the entire biblical message.
So the argument becomes, you shut that off, Jared. We'll run out of time. The argument becomes the paganism, right? How much we've paganized the Christmas thing, not whether or not Christians ought to be celebrating the birth of Jesus. We should all be doing it. We all do that. But the commercialization, the paganism, the idea that Christmas isn't even really about the birth of the Savior anymore. That's the sad part. Hey, anybody close us up here? Nothing? Well, let's hopefully wake up tomorrow. The Electoral College has been good boys and good girls, have done what they were supposed to do, and then we'll brace for the next thing that's going to happen. And hey, God's in control of it. Yeah, Larry.
Let me go from where you started today. You said Jesus is in control. Now, where does it say that in the Bible? And here's a comment that came to my ears when you said that. This is the kind, Jesus is in control is different from Jesus has all authority.
Right. It is. That's right. As my buddy says, Jesus is in control, but he doesn't control everything. That's right. He has all power. All power comes from him, but he doesn't micromanage everything. That's the way it is. Hey, awesome. God bless y'all. Stay warm. We'll see you tomorrow.